Hey everyone, and welcome back to True Crime Cases. I'm your host, Allison Mendes, and today I'm going to be diving into the murder of Tristan Bailey, which is a case that is ongoing right now. Now, before we get into the case, I wanted to briefly talk about two things. One, I have gotten some feedback in the form of reviews, and I just wanted to say that I do appreciate feedback from you guys, whether it's positive or negative. That being said, I apologize for any heavy breathing in the mic. I am working on adjusting that and fixing it so that you guys don't have to listen to that. I know that's probably not pleasant. I am also currently pregnant, so the breathing is a side effect of that. I find myself really out of breath just from talking, but I am working on fixing it on the audio side for you guys so that you don't have to listen to that. I also wanted to mention one of the new true crime podcast that has come out that I have recently come across called Murder in the Wires. I know that I'm always looking for new true crime podcasts to listen to. I just can't get enough. And if you're like me, then I definitely recommend checking those guys out. Again, it's called Murder in the Wires. And that was really all I wanted to go over. So let's just dive right into the case. So on Sunday, May 9th of this year, which was also Mother's Day, Stacy Bailey called 911 to report her daughter, 13-year-old Tristan Bailey, missing. She described her daughter as 5'4", weighing about 130 pounds, and she explained that she was a student in the 7th grade at Patriot Oaks Academy, which is a public school in St. Augustine, Florida. Stacy explained on the 911 call that her daughter had been last seen by one of her siblings at around midnight and that she was discovered missing that morning when her siblings went in to wake her up to make breakfast for Mother's Day with them, and Tristan was not in her bed. The family immediately searched for Tristan around the home but could not locate her, and her father, Forrest Bailey, searched the area around the home but could not find her anywhere there either. I know it's said that he did search something called the Amenity Center, which is going to be brought up quite a bit throughout the case. I want to explain it to you guys so that you kind of have a visual what I'm talking about. And I am also going to be posting maps and stuff like that on my social media so that you guys can see what I'm actually talking about. But the Amenity Center is kind of like how some neighborhoods have like a public pool for the neighborhood, and they've got like, I think it has tennis courts at it, and it's something like that. So that's what the Amenity Center is. And I know he searched around there and he could not find her. So Tristan was discovered to have been missing around 9:40 a.m. on Sunday morning, and the 911 call was placed at 10 a.m. So they called pretty much immediately. It seems like they realized she was missing. They searched the home immediately and really quickly called 911 to report her missing. Stacy made it clear that Tristan had never snuck out of the house before, as far as she knew of, and that her cell phone was not in her room. When they tried to call her cell phone, it went straight to voicemail, and Tristan's location services on her phone had been turned off, so they could not track her through like their Family 360 app that one of them, at least one of them I know, had access to her location on there. She had stopped sharing it and her location services were turned off. And Stacy went on to explain that her daughter, on the 911 call, she explained, you know, her daughter is very social at school. She's on 3 different cheerleading squads that she just started hanging out with a new group of kids that live in their neighborhood. She also said that Tristan had been a little bit distant recently and was in her room a little bit more than usual, but that she hadn't expressed or vocalized any plans to harm herself or run away from home, and she was not on any medication or diagnosed with depression or anxiety. According to First Coast News, which is who I got most of this timeline from because they got it directly from the from law enforcement, but according to them, law enforcement ordered a ping order for Tristan's phone at 2:23 p.m. that same day in an attempt to locate her, assuming that wherever Tristan's phone was, she would be there as well. Forrest Bailey accessed the AT&T phone records, which indicated that the last time Tristan had used her phone had been late on Saturday night when she sent an outgoing text message to a 407 area code number. Tristan's sister had seen her in the garage around midnight on a video call with a white male wearing a backwards white baseball cap. So I'm assuming that what they meant by the last time she used her phone might have meant the last time anything outgoing was pinged from her phone. So not including something that might be incoming, like an incoming text or an incoming call, but something that she herself placed. Her sister said that she had been wearing a white cheer shirt and dark shorts at the time that she saw her in the garage on this video call. The cell phone records further showed an incoming voice call from a fellow student and neighborhood resident who would end up being 14-year-old Aiden Fucci. Deputy Robert Maloney and Deputy Liam Stack interviewed a minor named Trey at 2:54 p.m., who informed them that Tristan and Aiden had actually arrived at his home that morning at 12:30 a.m., so kind of what we would call the previous night, but it was after midnight, so it was technically that morning. He explained that Tristan avoided the security cameras around his home by sneaking around the north side of his house. He said Tristan and Aiden had left his house together at the same time, and that the last time he saw her, she had been wearing a black and gray t-shirt with the word pink across the front and black sweatpants. After this interview, Deputy Maloney went to interview Aiden at his home and with his mother, Crystal Smith's consent. Aiden took Deputy Maloney to where he and Tristan had gone after they left Trey's home. He explained that they walked to North Durban Parkway, at which point Tristan turned onto Cloisterbane Drive and headed towards her home, and he walked along North Durban Parkway towards his home, which he says he arrived at between 3 to 3:30 a.m. At this point, Deputy Maloney asked Aiden to kind of clarify his time frame because it wasn't really adding up. It doesn't add up that it would take approximately 2 hours to walk from Trey's house straight back to his house, like he claimed. According to Google, the distance from Trey's house to his is only about 1.4 miles and shouldn't take longer than, I think it said 28 minutes to be exact, but around 30 minutes to walk. And this is where Aiden's story changes. He then explained that actually he and Tristan had continued walking along North Durban Parkway and that at some point Tristan had grabbed his penis, and in response to that, he said he forcibly pushed her to the ground, which caused her to hit her head. He didn't say on what. I'm assuming he means on the pavement or on the ground, whatever. He said this incident happened near the 600 block of North Durban Parkway, north of Leith Hall Drive. And I know all these street names are really confusing just to listen to without a visual, so I will be posting the maps for reference on the social media. I know I mentioned that earlier, but this is really where it kind of comes into play. So those will be posted for you guys so you can kind of picture the walkthrough of what he's saying happened. Aiden said he didn't know if Tristan ever got up after he pushed her because He never looked back and he was dizzy when it happened due to the marijuana that he had smoked earlier at Trey's house. He then told Deputy Maloney that after this, he walked around alone for a while. Then he explained that Tristan could be with a drug dealer that she regularly communicates with through Snapchat, who is in his 20s. He also said that maybe she could be on a path by the North Amenities Center, which was known to be where teenagers would hang out and maybe smoke pot or do drugs. But keep in mind, this is the area that her father had searched earlier that morning and she had not been there. So based on this statement from Aiden, Deputy Maloney did believe that a crime had taken place. And at this point, he advised Aiden of his rights, which Aiden invoked, and he was returned to his parents, who requested an attorney. At 3 p.m. that Sunday, Corporal Justin Ackerman of the Special Victims Unit went to interview two of Tristan's friends, Samantha and Lena. Now, I'm not including last names for anyone but the victim herself and the boy who has been charged with the crime that took place. Just because these are minors, their names are very available. If you guys Google them, they're in the links that I'll post for my sources. But in my opinion, I just don't want to include their last names. If you really need to know it, I know that you guys can find it. I'm just not super comfortable using all their last names because they're so young. So it's just, I don't want to do that. Anyways, Ackerman said that nobody was home when he went to see the two girls, but that he was able to make contact with Samantha and Lena's father, Jerry, who informed him that Lena had contacted Trey, who was the boys' house that they were at the night before, and she was told that Tristan and another boy had snuck out of their homes in the middle of the night and had been hanging out around North Amenities Center. Trey said that he and the other boy had gone home, but that Tristan was going to hang out with a 22-year-old drug dealer named Carlo. So obviously those stories are a little different. The official story is that they were at Trey's house. So Tristan snuck out and Aiden snuck out and they went to Trey's house together late at night. And I guess they smoked some weed. So I'm assuming that something got crossed in the wires when Samantha and Lena told their dad what they had heard from Trey. This is like a third-hand account. So I think the story maybe just got a little bit mixed up. And what Trey was saying was that they were at his house and they left together, but she wasn't planning on going home. Aiden was, and she was going to meet up with this guy, Carlo, who is a 20-something-year-old drug dealer, apparently. So at 3:29 p.m., the patrol supervisor, Sergeant Christopher Alexander, began receiving the ping results from the inquiry that they had sent out at 2:23 p.m. earlier that day. The location showed a 2,500-meter radius, with a central location being a wooded area south of the Loop Nursery, located at 4842 Racetrack Road. The signal was historical, which means that it wasn't actively sending any signals at this time. These were the signals that it had last sent out, where it was last located, and last, I'm assuming the phone was dead or damaged or something like that. But it hadn't sent out any further pings since. After receiving this information, Deputy Hannon requested a 30-day history of Tristan's calls and texts in an attempt to identify a pattern of who she's communicating with on a regular basis and if there was any recent deviations in that pattern. And more specifically, of course, who she had been in contact with on the night of Saturday, May 8th into the early morning of May 9th. At 3:59 p.m., Deputy Hannon received the results of her text and call history, but due to a technical complication, he was unable to open the file at that point, so he headed back to the Unified Command Center to get this issue resolved and access the files. At 4:29 p.m., Hannon received an email depicting a Snapchat message that Aiden Fucci had taken earlier when law enforcement had gone to question him, which showed Aiden in the back of the police squad car throwing up a peace sign in the reflection of the patrol car divider that had a caption reading, "Hey guys, has anyone seen Tristan lately?" The snapshot had been forwarded to two people apparently and had responding messages which read, quote, what the fuck, Aiden, end quote. And the second one was, quote, "You were with her, Aiden. You know what happened to her," end quote. Which is crazy that someone already suspected something like that. And I think that this Snapchat instantly started circulating on social media. And you'll see why I think that's what happened in a little while. But after seeing this, Deputy Hannon notified the investigating team and requested that Aiden's phone be seized, as it could possibly have evidence that related to the investigation. And at 4:50 p.m., Sergeant Thomas Marmo of the Special Victims Unit, with the assistance of the Florida Department of Law Enforcement Missing Endangered Persons Information Clearinghouse, requested a missing child alert for Tristan Bailey. Finally, at 5:02 p.m., law enforcement was able to get into the report that detailed Tristan's call and text history for the past 30 days. And according to the records, the last outgoing call was on May 7th at 9 p.m. to her sister. The records didn't show any call or text detail for May 8th, which was the Saturday. And the remainder of the texts and calls were all incoming and began around the time Tristan had been discovered missing, which would be around 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Sunday morning. At 5:10 p.m., Detective Peluso began conducting audio recorded interviews with the Bailey family, who were at this point unaware of any previous issues with Tristan sneaking out of the home. According to them, this was the first time that something like that had happened. And to me, this is a pretty normal age for someone to start having this type of behavior. And, you know, she's a teenager. She's 13 years old. And so this is kind of a normal time in a girl's life to maybe start acting out a little bit. But another detective was conducting an interview with another girl named Katarina, who I'm assuming was a friend of the group. Obviously, she is relevant to this situation in some manner. But Katarina told the detective that a video had been going around on social media of Trey encouraging another girl named Lola to sneak out on the same night of May 8th. But she said in the video that she couldn't, that she wasn't going to be able to. So then in the video, apparently Trey contacted Tristan to convince her to sneak out that very same night, which she obviously did. At 6:06 p.m., the sheriff's office received a call from a man named Daniel Hart, who had discovered what appeared to be a deceased female body. And at 6:15 p.m. on Mother's Day, Deputy Robert pronounced Tristan Bailey dead. It was her that had been found, and her body was discovered in a wooded area about 80 feet from a retention pond south of the Durbin Creek Nursery, which was located at 4286 Racetrack Road. She was lying on her right side, her head was pointed east looking north, and her feet were pointed to the west. Her right leg was slightly bent at the knee, and her left leg was bent at a 90 degree angle at the knee. Her right arm was extended with a slight bend at the elbow, and her left arm was bent at the elbow with her hand touching her chin. She was wearing a black Victoria's Secret shirt with the word pink on the front, black Nike brand sweatpants, and black and white slip-on Vans. Tristan's blonde hair was matted with blood, and she had multiple sharp force injury wounds on her hands, arms, neck, and to her back, where there were multiple holes in her shirt that were visible. In the area around her body, crime scene technicians found a gold-toned ring, a cell phone that was later identified to be her phone, a $20 bill, and a pink vape device. In addition to these items, there was also a possible shoe impression in the wooded area and a Powerade bottle near the pond. The medical examiner would later conclude that Tristan was stabbed 114 times. 35 of the wounds were to her head and neck alone, according to the report. The rest of the wounds were to her torso, chest, back, and upper extremities. I later read that there was, I think, about 49 of them that were to her extremities, like her arms and everything like that. And they were defensive wounds. So she fought as hard as she could. It's just so sad. The word karma was also written in handwriting in blue ink inside her left ankle, and a smiley face was drawn inside her right ankle, according to the medical examiner's report. But it didn't say who put the writing on Tristan's body, and I haven't seen anything that addresses who they think did that. At 6:31 p.m., Detective Carter interviewed Daniel Hart, who is the man that had discovered Tristan's body. Daniel explained that he had searched the wooded area and the pond near his home after he got back from a run, and that's when he found Tristan. But he made it very clear right off the bat, I didn't touch anything around or near the body. I didn't get near it. I saw it and I immediately called 911. I'm assuming he had seen the news or something and knew what was going on and that she had gone missing in the neighborhood, so he probably went out to see. Detective Thompson arrived at Aiden's home on Castledale Court at 6:40 p.m. to secure the property. Upon arrival, he was informed by two other deputies that were already on the scene that nobody was home, at which point they secured the residence with some crime scene tape, and they waited on a search warrant that was pending an application. At 8 p.m., deputies headed to the North Amenity Center, where Aiden was with his parents, and took Aiden into custody to the SJSO Central Investigations Division. And Detective Holland also headed to Trey's home to interview him and his father around this same time. Now, when he got to the house, Trey's father explained that his son was friends with Aiden and that he knew Aiden's family well, but that he himself had never met Tristan. His father told the detectives that he learned that Aiden had visited the night before when he had woken his son up that morning, at which time Trey had disclosed to him that Aiden had come over and hung out for a little while the night before. He said that after law enforcement had left that day, after the initial interview he had with Trey at around 11 a.m., once they left, that's when he learned that Tristan had also been at his home. He explained that they did have security cameras around the house, but that Trey did know where they were and had snuck out before and was able to avoid them. So he made that clear. I'm assuming they wanted the security tapes and I'm sure they gave them to them. There just wasn't anything on them. So he was explaining why. Back with Aiden, Deputy Maloney discovered a blue handheld folding knife when he conducted a pat down for weapons. Maloney said that he inspected the knife but did not see anything suspicious about it. So he handed it back over to Aiden's father, Jason Fucci. Later, when law enforcement asked that the knife be turned back over, Jason said that he had placed it on the bumper of his truck and forgot about it before he drove off and that it must have fallen off somewhere. But when deputies would return to the area to find it, the knife was absolutely nowhere to be found. And as far as I know, they still have not found that knife to this day. Now, a little bit before 9 p.m., Aiden arrived at the CID and was placed in an interview room. I think he arrived at 8:49 p.m. exactly. This room was being both audio and video recorded. Jason and Crystal were both present in the room with Aiden, and both parents made several comments to Aiden, advising him not to say anything about whether he was or was not involved in the crime in any way, and they informed him that the room was likely being recorded. But then they went on to ask Aiden several questions about the incident, which he answered. So I'm not sure why they did that. I mean, I'm sure they weren't really thinking straight. Their kid is obviously wrapped up in something really serious, so I can't imagine. Crystal reportedly told Aiden that Tristan was found in the neighborhood, to which Aiden responded, quote, "Is she good?" end quote, And Crystal responded, quote, "No, she's dead. That's why this is very important. It's all on you right now," end quote. Aiden responded to that by saying, quote, "How is it my problem?" end quote. And I did see reports that said he also said this later to law enforcement in an interview, which is just a very troubling way to react to the situation. Crystal and Jason then both reminded Aiden that he had been the last person seen with her. Maybe that's why it's your problem. And they also told him the Snapchat that he had posted in the back of the police car was not a smart idea, and that they were already receiving threats because of it. And that's why I think that the Snapchat was circulating on social media, was maybe because they had already been receiving threats, which means that it had obviously gotten out somehow. Jason then reportedly asked Aiden if he had any scrapes or scratches on him, to which Aiden replied, "No, sir." Jason also asked him if he had told police anything different from what he and Crystal already knew, and Aiden said that he hadn't, and that he explained that he had told police Tristan had probably been picked up by her drug dealer and that she wasn't going home and that she was going to find someone to stay with. Crystal continued asking about where Tristan went after Aiden had left her, and he told her that she had probably kept on walking, to which Jason interrupted and said Aiden had pushed her down, then kept walking. Then he cut himself off again and said, "We probably shouldn't be talking in here." But then Jason continued again after telling Aiden, "You walked away, you came straight home, you didn't turn back and see what happened to her or where she went. You didn't turn back around." Aiden then shook his head no, and his father asked, "Well, what were you doing outside that late at night?" And Aiden stated that he was at Trey's house just hanging out. So I'm assuming all of this is really just them going over it again and again. They're confused. They don't know what's going on. They're trying to make sense of it. They want to, I'm sure, protect their son like any parent would. But I'm sure they also want to know what his involvement is so that they can be prepared for that. Jason then asked him, "Did you kiss or do anything with them?" Which I think he just means obviously Tristan. And Aiden admitted at that point to kissing Tristan, but assured his father that nothing further had happened. And his father replied to that by saying, quote, "So your DNA is going to be on her?" question mark, end quote. And Aiden did not respond. Jason then said, "We saw your shoes were off on the camera. Why were your shoes off?" And Aiden explained the shoes that he had been wearing gave him blisters and that his feet were sore, so he took them off for the walk home. I know there's a lot of speculation about why he had his shoes off and maybe if there was sexual assault involved and that's why his shoes were off. I'm going to say right now that the family I've heard has put out that they wanted to make it clear that no sexual assault took place. And when law enforcement was asked about it at the most recent press release that I watched, it was asked if there was sexual assault, and he said that he wasn't going to comment on that. So I'm not sure what that means. I'm not sure if that means they're not positive yet or what, but he just said he wouldn't comment on it. So it definitely has not been confirmed by law enforcement whatsoever. Anyways, back to the parents. Jason then told Aiden that because of the Snapchat that he had taken in the back of the police car with Trey, that people were coming to the conclusion that Aiden and Trey had raped Tristan and murdered her. And when Aiden heard his dad say this, he didn't even respond. His mother then asked him if Tristan had really grabbed him, like he said, which he responded to with a yes. Jason asked him again if he knew what happened to her, and Aiden said no. Crystal then asked if Tristan had said, ow, or gotten angry or anything when he pushed her, or if she had yelled anything, said anything at all. And at this point, Aiden claimed that Tristan had yelled out his name when he pushed her, and he told her to fuck off, and then he walked away, and he did not look back. And Jason then asked, you know, kind of straight up, if they needed to worry about anything, and Aiden said no. And Crystal informed him that the house was being searched. Jason then asked Aiden why he was damp or wet when he got home, and Aiden said, First, he said he was damp because he had spilled a cup of water on himself, but Jason wasn't buying it and kind of kept pressing him about it. And then Aiden said that he was wet because he had fallen on his way home. Finally, at 8:59 p.m., Detective Thompson enters the interview room and requested Jason and Crystal's consent so that he could collect a DNA swab, photographs, fingernail scrapings, all of that from Aiden. But Crystal informed him that they were going to wait until their attorney arrived to give any sort of consent. Police then questioned Aiden, where he finally admitted to them, I think, that he had kissed Tristan before he pushed her down and that he had walked away. He never admitted to killing her or anything like that, just that he walked away. And that was what I gathered from the police interview with him. Later, when police searched Aiden's home, they found bloody clothes and sneakers, as well as a notebook containing violent drawings, satanic images such as pentagrams. I know one drawing depicted like a naked female with red X's over her nipples and her genitals, and what appeared to be blood coming from several wounds on her. And later his girlfriend came forward, Aiden's girlfriend, he had one, came forward and said that Aiden had made a habit out of sneaking up behind her with a knife and pretending to slit her throat, like actually putting the knife up to her throat and pretending to slit it. I don't know who needs to know that that's not normal, but it's not. That's very alarming. Multiple classmates also told police that Aiden had told them and been vocal that he wanted to murder someone, and that he was adamant that he was going to do it in the next 30 days and that he wanted to do it in the woods and he wanted to stab someone to death. And no one said anything. They didn't say anything to their teachers. They didn't say anything to their parents. It's just appalling when you hear this kind of stuff and then you see the result of what happens. And you just really can't stress to kids enough that, like, when people say stuff like that, even if you think it's a joke, just tell someone, just tell an adult so that we can get to the bottom of whether or not it really is a joke, because it could likely be very serious and a little girl is now dead. The state attorney later came forward and said that Aiden's knife had been found in a pond next to Tristan's body and that the tip of the knife was broken off. And the medical examiner later found that same tip of that same knife broken off into Tristan's skull. The state's attorney further said that the investigators had located DNA evidence from Aiden on Tristan's body. They didn't confirm what kind of DNA evidence. They did not confirm, like I said earlier, sexual assault. He also said that Tristan's DNA was found on shoes belonging to Aiden that were confiscated from his bedroom. And the surveillance video obtained by law enforcement showed two people believed to be Tristan and Aiden walking east along Saddlestone Drive at 1:45 a.m. And more video captured at 3:27 a.m. showed Aiden walking alone, this time west down Saddlestone Drive. And this is when he was carrying his pair of white Nike shoes in his hand. According to the affidavit, the white sneakers, as well as a hoodie that were later found in Aiden's room, contained bloodstains that were later confirmed as Tristan's DNA. The warrant also states that two friends of Aiden's identified the Buck brand folding knife that had been recovered from the pond as identical to a knife that Aiden was known to carry. And I wanted to state, too, that Crystal Smith, Aiden's mom, was arrested and she's released on bond. But she was caught and she's being charged with tampering with evidence. She apparently went into, so law enforcement came to her house and asked to search the property. She said no, which is what any smart human being is going to do, no matter what, whether you're guilty or innocent, you always say no, you make them get a search warrant. And while they went and got the search warrant, she went up to her son's room, got his bloody jeans, took them to the laundry room and washed them and then put them back in his room. And they have cameras in their house, which captured all this. Of course, later when they came back with the search warrant, they had been inside the home already when they had initially talked to Aiden, and they'd seen the security cameras and they'd subpoenaed those as well. So they got the footage of her doing that. And I heard that one of her friends actually came forward, that there's a witness in the video when she's doing the jeans. And I think that might be the friend that came forward, but someone came forward and reported that she had done that. And I know a lot of stuff is coming out and a lot of people are really criticizing her. And I totally understand that. It's never right to cover up for your child. I know that that's a natural instinct, but I don't really think that she was in the right frame of mind when she did that, to be completely honest. I think as a mom, you would be so frantic trying to protect your son. You might not even have any idea. At that point, I don't even think they'd found Tristan's body. So I don't think that she knew. I don't know. I don't want to get too far into it. I don't want to defend her or slam her for it. I just don't think she was in the right frame of mind. I mean, she was on her own video cameras and she still did it. She wasn't thinking clearly. But she is being charged with tampering with evidence, which is a felony. So it's a very serious charge. But initially, with all this evidence against him, initially, Aiden, he was obviously arrested and he was initially charged with second degree murder. But that quickly changed to first degree murder. And although he is 14 years old, he will be tried as an adult. Although the death penalty will not be on the table because of his age. And also due to his age, he will, even if he receives a life sentence, I think after 40 years or something like that, or after 25 years, a judge has to reevaluate it. So I know he will have the possibility of parole, even if he is sentenced to the full life sentence. But that being said, I think he should be tried as an adult. They did say at the press conference, because I think some people were a little bit upset that he was being tried as an adult because he's so young. He's in eighth grade. It's insane when you think about this. But what the state's attorney explained was that the juvenile system is just not equipped to prosecute something like this and this kind of crime. And I think the max sentence he could serve would be till he was like 21 or something like that. And that's just not adequate. So there was really no decision to be made. He needed to be tried as an adult. And I think I 100% agree with that. A little girl lost her life and she's not going to get to experience any adulthood. And I don't believe that he should be able to either. But I wanted to end this episode with some of the quotes that were said about Tristan at her memorial that was recently held, where thousands of friends, neighbors, and classmates turned out to celebrate her life. Some of the girls and the moms in Tristan's cheerleading squads talked about her drive, her spunk, and her kindness. One of the cheer squads that Tristan was part of recently competed in Orlando, Florida, at an ESPN competition where they did place first. And they proudly displayed Tristan's championship jacket along with flowers and signs and photos during her memorial on stage. Tristan's older sister recalled her contagious laugh and what she called, quote, the most beautiful smile I've ever seen in my life. Her sister said how she had always admired Tristan's determination and the fact that she never gave up until she reached her goals. The family spoke of how they called themselves the Bailey Seven and that the loss of their baby Bailey would not change that. Her father, Forrest, said if there was one thing he could ask of people, it was that when times are tough, that they might remember the example his daughter set. And he said, quote, our love is greater than the evil that can exist in the world, end quote. And with that, I just want to thank everyone so much for tuning in this week and every week. As usual, I will be linking all of my sources for this episode in the show notes, as well as the video link to Tristan's memorial service if you'd like to watch that. I highly suggest it. It's very beautiful and very moving. You can find this podcast on Instagram at True Crime Cases Pod, on Twitter at TC Cases Pod, and on Facebook at True Crime Cases Podcast. I always post photos from all of the cases that I cover on all of my social media, as well as take suggestions for future cases that you guys want to hear about. If you like this podcast, please don't forget to hit subscribe and leave a review if you have time. It is greatly appreciated, and I love to hear all sorts of feedback. Thank you guys so much again, and I will be back next Tuesday with a brand new case.